Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And we say hello to you, and we're really glad you are with us on a Wednesday afternoon. We've made it to the middle of the week, and what an amazingly difficult week this has been. But let's try to swim our way to the end of it on a good note, and let's begin with some headlines that we would like to share with you. Perhaps you have missed. The return of college football for workouts begins. COVID-19 issues, here we go, could threaten the fall. Want to start off in a positive way. Hard to do so. That's a headline from USA Today. Can we get a good headline? No, we can't. Headline from ESPN. The New York Marathon, one of the most prestigious outside of the Boston, is gone, canceled because of COVID-19. This is usually held in late October, early November. Why is it being canceled now? Well, the answer may portend that we're in for a rocky summer and fall. Surprise, surprise. Meanwhile, more from the Bubba Wallace situation. It was about 22 hours ago when the news broke that the investigation was not centering on the noose being found to be a hate crime. Instead, NASCAR officials now say that the noose had been there since last October. The FBI had 15 FBI agents. Bubba Wallace speaking about the last couple of days, saying it's been an emotional few days. First off, I want to say how relieved I am that the investigation revealed that this wasn't what we feared it was. I want to thank my team, my NASCAR team, and the FBI for acting swiftly and treating this as a real threat. I think we'll gladly take a little embarrassment over what the alternatives could have been. Make no mistake, though some will try, this should not detract from the show of unity we had on Monday and the progress we've made as a sport to be more welcoming and to be a more welcoming environment to all. A lot of reaction to Bubba Wallace, and I suspect, in fact, I know we'll have a lot of it today here. You're welcome to call in. That's what we do here. Give us a ring at 855-242-7285. A lot of interesting guests as well, and we'll start with those here in just a few moments. Alex Berenson, best-selling novelist, former New York Times financial reporter, and now he has become a major critic of fear porn in COVID. Yes, he's written a book about it. He would take a completely different view than many of the network commentators who will scare you to death. We'll talk to Alex shortly. Harris English from the University of Georgia on the PGA Tour. He played over the weekend. We'll find out what it's like playing in the era of COVID. Jim Cavell. He is a well-known expert on the NIL, and we look forward to talking to Jim. And Dr. Michael Sag, one of the leading epidemiologists in the world, on where are we in return to campus and football. Dr. Sag joining us in a couple hours. But first, your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and let's begin with Pat in Warner Robins, Georgia. Pat, great to have you on. Thank you.
Stop.
Hey, Pat, you there?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I enjoyed listening to the interview last night of Mayor Maddox from Tuscaloosa. I thought that was a very interesting interview.
And well, he was great, by the way.
He was. And I wanted... I've got two things on my mind, and... the first one is the spike in COVID-19, and it's not a second wave. This is the first wave, and with the news every day, whether you agree with the science or not, the news every day indicates that we're not going to be doing a lot of things. And New York, is it the Boston or the New York Marathon?
We're talking about the New York Marathon here.
New York Marathon. So it's, and our son is being tested right now and for COVID, and it's iffy whether he has the flu or whether he has COVID, but hopefully they'll figure it out and he'll be okay. But the other thing, Cat Daddy last week, you know, Jesus loves the little children of the world, and it made me think, I have all the churches I've ever gone to in my life and been members of, and I'm rather ecumenical, there's one basic Christian tenet. God made all 7,400,000,000 of us on this earth in his image and likeness. And if you go to church, that message is there. You may have to pay attention. You may have to use both ears. You may have to examine your conscience. But it's there. So I don't know that we can really do anything else. And I would be interested in your, in what you think about that.
Yeah, I'm really heartwarmed by your thoughts there. I agree with you, Pat. I feel like we're on a treadmill and we're trying to go both ways.
Well, I hadn't thought about it that way, but what made me think about that is I heard a caller last week saying the churches weren't doing enough, and that's really what sort of planted this seed in my mind to bring it up. But I've got I haven't called in earlier this week. Both of our grandkids are down here.
Let me interrupt you. So are you waiting tests right now? Where are you with the COVID situation?
Kevin, who works, he's a manager at Chick-fil-A in Athens. Their temperature protocol would not let him go to work last Thursday.
Okay.
He went to urgent care. They sent him to Athens Regional.
Right.
They did nasal and throat swabs that came back inconclusive. They did
inconclusive.
They drew blood to look for antibodies, and the antibodies came back flu. That was last Thursday. He went back today, and they did more antibodies, and he's not any better. I certainly hope it's then. He's got to go back again on Friday.
Okay.
The testing has been fine. I just think it's a false negative.
Yeah.
On the flu antibodies, but it all started because Chick-fil-A's protocol is if you've got 100.3, you can't come to work.
That is amazing. Well, listen, I'll be certainly thinking of you, and I know everyone's praying. Hey, thank you so much for the call. Bryson is in Tennessee. Bryson, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the Bubba Wallace situation. And, you know, I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, but it's kind of driving me nuts that some people have been calling Bubba a liar and just, you know, ripping him on social media. But let's all first be thankful that this wasn't a death threat, because that's what's important above everything else. But why are some people acting like he just made this up? Because somebody told him this.
But Bryson, let's be honest. There are quite a few idiots out there, and I'm to the point. I don't want to act like I don't pay attention to social media. I don't think you can be in the media these days and not keep your eye on it. But I really wish people wouldn't take it seriously. I mean, you have a bunch of wackos who just spew garbage, and I know young people maybe take it more seriously than people my age or yours, but Bubba Wallace has been through a great deal. I give him credit. He's been I saw him a couple of times today on television. He's trying to answer the questions as honestly as he can. He's still a young guy whose entire world is spinning upside down, but you know, he has nothing to apologize for.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I would like NASCAR to explain why they hit the panic button before they had a chance to figure out. I don't mind NASCAR admitting that they were investigating, but NASCAR helped inflame this by putting all the actionable words in their statement Sunday night.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, what I think is also just, and I think the FBI is investigating this too, but like, why was that one door cord the only one at Talladega that was shaped like a noose? That's what's just kind of,
yeah,
really kind of weird.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. And my guess is this story is probably going to have a few more twists and turns before it's all over. I mean, there's the same people that are hating on Bubba Wallace are exactly who we thought they were when this all began.
Well, it's the same people that were hating on him when he wanted the Confederate flag to be banned.
Exactly. NASCAR is a I can't remember who said it the other day. NASCAR is a much better sport than it used to be. It's not the Dukes of Hazzards of 30 or 40 years ago, but it still has a stigma, and it's to be determined. I mean, I know everyone wants to talk about that moment Monday, but what does that moment mean now? I mean, it's not, you know, I'm not being critical of people that stood with Bubba. I think we all did, but it's not hard to stand for what's right. I mean, those 39 drivers, other than Bubba and NASCAR, they're good people. They're trying to make a living. Those people aren't the problem. They never were. It was still a nice moment, though. I don't want to take away from it. Shannon is up next in Georgia. Hey, Shannon.
Paul, I cannot believe what I just heard you say, that Bubba has nothing to apologize for.
Did I misstate myself?
Well, he went on Don Lemon last night on CNN and said, and I quote, whether tied in 2019 or whatever, it was a noose. It's a straight up noose.
Okay.
And I'm reading from CNN.
No, I saw the interview. Right, I saw the interview. You are correct.
So, Paul, it was not a noose. It is a figure eight knot or a loop knot tied at the end of a garage string pull. Can we stop referring to it as a noose? It wasn't a noose.
Well, let me ask you this: where did the noose come from?
Where did the first reference to the noose
come from?
That came from NASCAR when they released it to the media. And then,
have you seen a picture of it yet?
Of course not. They're not going to reveal that picture. And I said to you yesterday, Paul, if they had the noose, they would show a picture of it. Paul, and the media took it, and instead of fact checking, and instead of letting it play out, not only did they fan the flame.
Hold on a second. I need to ask you a question, Shannon.
Yes.
But let's do this incrementally.
Okay.
Story comes out late Sunday night. What's the first thing we saw? I mean, I think the first thing I saw was Marty Smith on ESPN. Would that be fair to you?
Yeah, that was when Marty Smith came on ESPN and was on with Scott Van Pelt.
Right, that's the first time I heard about it.
And Marty Smith backtracks and says, I was just defending NASCAR and saying that our sport has changed, and now I'm utterly embarrassed that this kind of sick behavior goes on.
I think he said
and
crap.
He absolutely. Excuse me?
I think he said the word crap.
Yeah, crap. And he absolutely fueled the flame without having any sort of foundation for doing that.
Well, Shannon, I'm not defending the meat. I'm trying to analyze it, and we're going to have to crush here. But that is how this rocket ship lifted off, with NASCAR's statement, and then most of us, my first association with the story was Marty saying what he did. And that's how I began to formulate it. I was on television about 8 o'clock that morning reacting to it. I didn't talk about the incident. I just talked about NASCAR's struggle to change. And then everyone else went crazy. Do I agree with you? People went out of control? Of course they did. Hey, I hate to run. We'll continue this conversation in a minute, but we are late to the break. Back with much more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back to the program here on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's check in with Eric next in South Carolina. Hello, Eric.
Yeah, hey, Paul. Love the show. Short time listener. But I feel like you've kind of digressed in the last, couple weeks here with all this, what's going on? I feel like I'm tuning in to Jamil Hill now instead of your show. And it's kind of frustrating. Like, I'm a sports fan. I want to listen to sports. But, like, I feel like all I hear is how shamed I should be. And I, like, I'm kind of getting tired of it. Am I just a snowflake here, or what's going on?
I don't think you are. I'm just trying to understand what you're tired of, I guess, is maybe my question back to you.
Well, you just, this whole concept of, like, Bubba Wallace and things need to change, and, like, and again, like, you know, over and over, I'm not saying the guy lied about it. I'm sure somebody probably tried to, you know, maybe said, hey, this is odd, this is weird, should he have been put in there? No. But, like, this is the third or fourth time in the last year or two that we've been told how racist we are in America, and it hasn't turned out right. And at, like,
well,
some
but,
point,
but
I just
but Eric,
out
I don't,
because
I don't know. I think there are – I think there – I didn't start this, and Bubba Wallace didn't start this. This conversation began 4 weeks ago with the killing of George Floyd, and I agree. I certainly don't want to be castigating good people that support this show, but I also – you know, think it's time to end racism. I don't think I'm the first person to ever say that. Toby is up next. Toby is in Kentucky, and you are on the air.
Okay, I got three or four points to make. So after I make the points, you can respond. But I would like to make the point just about the guy in Atlanta. He resisted arrest because he's a convicted child abuser, from my information. He didn't want to go back to jail. George Floyd, which, that's wrong what happened to him. But let's be honest, he has a criminal record, fentanyl, methamphetamine. Why is it that all these black martyrs are convicts? And nobody's racist against nobody, just like Bubba. What I heard from my information, there was 30 or 40 of them hanging in the garage. People used to pull down the doors. I mean, this is crazy what's going on. They're trying to, and also, less than 12 black people a year are killed unarmed by police. They act like police is just walking up with black people everywhere. It's not true. I mean, this is crazy what they're doing. I mean, less than 12 people a year are killed unarmed black in America. So, there you go.
Thank you for your call. David is up next. Hey, David.
Oh, hey, Paul. How you doing? Good show.
Thank you.
I don't know how to come back. I don't know how to come back to that one, but the reason I was calling in was I thought it was kind of the same as Eric, but it didn't turn out that way. You know, when I tune into your show, I'm tuning in to listen to sports. And I know you're a call-in driven show, and you go with what the people are calling in about. But at some point, I wish somebody would say, look, we're sport. I tune in to get away from it because I can hear it on every commercial I watch, everything on the radio is all about what's going on. I want to hear sports. One man I admire the most through all this is Chuck Oliver. I mean, he comes on every day. He don't have a call in at all. He prepares a show 365 days a year, and there's not been one show where any of this has come up. But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mitch is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
This was not my intention when I first called in, but I called last week and defended you, and I'm going to defend you again. Your show is all some people have to vent. Your show is all some people have to just see other people's sides to it. So for people to criticize the fact that you've allowed other people to vent, that's wrong. You're a good man, and you have a good show. And your heart shows to it. The reason I called is because I want to know if you have an opinion of the major college football programs. If we don't have a full season, which programs would be hurt the most in the recruiting and going forward?
Yeah, Mitch, I think if you look at that, you know, certainly let's start at the SEC level, okay? I think it's pretty obvious who could probably sustain this better than anyone else, and that would be the Alabamas and the LSUs and the Auburns, the Floridas, the Georgias. I'm leaving someone out, but I'm just Texas A&M. The schools that are well endowed. I think there's a few schools that would probably struggle more as you get around the country. The reason why college football is so important, outside of the fact that we like it and it's watched by millions of people every week, is that it supports all the other sports. And if you don't have college football, then the second tier sports are going to get cut out. By that I mean track and field and volleyball and soccer, softball, everything I think will get hurt badly because there just won't be the money for it. There may be some Title IX issues. I don't know. I'm sure there will be. But I think as you go down the food chain, just let's look at I think we had a coach on the other day from Jackson State, and he talked about they had this classic every year in Memphis that they made a lot of money off of. Those games are going by the wayside right now because there won't be fans. The small schools that depend on that $1.5 million to $2 million payday for the first couple weeks of the season, and then maybe the 11th week, those games could be in jeopardy. Even if we have a college football season, I think those early games could be in peril because it doesn't pay if you're Tennessee, just for example. Does it make sense to spend $2 million to bring Charlotte in when there's not going to be anybody in the stadium?
I agree with you, and now that you say that, I think about, I live here in Spartanburg. You know, Wofford plays either South Carolina or Clemson almost every other year, and I'm sure they depend on that big payday.
Absolutely. Thank you for, first of all, thank you for saying what you did, and I... you know, whatever somebody wants to say about me on this program, they are welcome to say it. That's what this show is for. But I do appreciate your comments. Thanks a lot. We have a very interesting guest now. We've heard a lot of people scare you with COVID numbers, and for good reason. Our next guest has a very interesting perspective. Former New York Times financial reporter and author Alex Berenson will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flail.
We welcome you back to the program, and our next guest is someone I became friendly with a number of years ago. I began reading a book. He was writing. He was former New York Times financial correspondent who began a career as an author. His John Wells books were all New York Times bestsellers, and for some mysterious reason, he decided to quit writing them and take on serious issues in the world. Alex Berenson rejoins us after a few years' absence. First of all, Alex, it's really great to have you back on. Good afternoon.
Paul, it's a pleasure. You know, I thought with no more Wells novels, I wasn't going to get to talk to you again.
I mean, not only did I enjoy them, friends, I turned them on to all of my other friends, and you began to get to know some of the Feinbaum book club. And so I'll push you on getting back to that. But what you're doing right now is pretty amazing. I see you popping up all over television. I saw you the other night with Tucker Carlson. You have another book out dealing with COVID-19. So I'm going to shut up. The name of your ebook is Unreported Truths About COVID-19 and Lockdowns, Part 1, Introduction and Death Counts and Estimates. I am going to move to the side of the stage and ask you about the transition into this at such an interesting time in our lives.
Sure. So look, like everybody else, I would say earlier this year, certainly January and February, as we're getting the news about COVID in China and these crazy videos of people dropping, you know, seemingly dropping dead on the streets and hospitals filled with body bags and you know, all those things that I think a lot of us saw on social media, like everybody else, I was very concerned about the coronavirus. And, you know, in March, then it's, you know, it spread to Italy. It started to spread in Europe. It started to spread in the U.S. And, you know, I started to question, you know, not that COVID is not real and not that it can't, you know, hurt people and certainly, you know, kill people who are, you know, especially older people with comorbidities, but whether or not it really was, you know, something on the order of the Spanish flu or worse than that, whether it was something that, you know, really would disrupt, our society, in mid-March, because, I saw a paper. This was actually the paper that really led to all the lockdowns. There was a paper that came out of the Imperial College of London, which the researchers were affiliated with the World Health Organization. So very, you know, very prominent group of researchers. And what it said was, you know, up to 2 million people in the United States could die if there's no mitigation efforts or suppression, what the authors called suppression of lockdown of society. That if this just spread, there'd be millions and millions of deaths. But what struck me as really surprising was how skewed the deaths were by age. That even in this paper, and this is mid-March, okay, so we've got a lot more data now than we did then. Even in this paper, if you looked at the deaths, they were predominantly in over 70 and really over 80. And so that's not to say that, you know, those people's lives don't matter. It's not to say that we shouldn't care and we shouldn't try to stop, you know, anybody from dying. But I thought to myself, if this thing is really that dangerous, if this is really, you know, if we're really headed into the apocalypse and this is the stand, how come it's so much more dangerous to people who are at the end of their lives than children or young adults or even middle-aged adults? Because that was not true of the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu famously killed a lot of children and young adults. So I started to really read everything I could. And I live near New York City. And as everybody knows, New York City was really getting hit in late March. And there were these models out there that said the state of New York, and really the city of New York, but the state of New York is going to need 140,000 beds. It's going to need 40,000 ventilators. And people really panicked. And it was clear, actually, by the end of March, by March 30th, March 31st, certainly by early April, that those numbers just wasn't panning out. It just was not happening that way. Not that there wasn't, you know, there weren't some problems at hospitals in New York City, but that this notion that we were going to be digging mass graves in Central Park, which was actually something that appeared on the pages of the New York Times, or that we would need a million ventilators for people, that stuff just was not true. And the media did not seem to either know or care that it was not true. And so I started tweeting about this a lot. And you know, at the time I had a few thousand Twitter followers. I was a blue check, as you are, meaning a verified account. So you have a little bit of extra credibility there. But I didn't really have very many followers, and people really started to hate me for this in the media, especially in the New York media. But there were other people who noticed the questions that I was asking, and one of them actually was Elon Musk, who obviously is an incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy, incredibly successful guy. And he, you know, he retweeted a question that I had asked about the Imperial College models, and suddenly people started to pay a little bit of attention. And so, because I want you to be able to ask questions, this is sort of jump forward over the next 2 months. I would say I became, you know, there have been other people questioning. You know, there's a Stanford professor who's raised a lot of questions. Actually, a couple people out of Stanford. There's people at the, you know, at Oxford, in, you know, in the UK who raised questions. But I would say in the media world, I might have become the most prominent person raising questions. And I took this tone on Twitter, which I would say was, you know, it was aggressive, and even at times I was somewhat satirical about stuff which people really didn't like. But my feeling was, this is an Orwellian moment, and sometimes when people are getting hysterical, you need to make it clear that they are being hysterical. And one way to do that is with satire. So fast forward to June. So I people are starting to email me and say, or tweet at me and say, look, Your feed is just so big right now. There's so much in here. Can you organize this in a way that makes some sense and publish it? And I thought to myself, you know what? That is a good idea. And I'm going to do that. And I'm going to charge a couple bucks. I've been doing all of this and not being paid by anybody. I gave one short speech, to one place. But aside from that, I've not been paid by anybody for the last 3 months. I'm going to, you know, I'll charge a couple bucks and hopefully I'll sell a few copies. It'll be a way to make a little bit of money because I feel like I have done a lot of work on this. fine. So I put together this booklet, Unreported Truths, and this one actually is really the least controversial of them, because all this does is say, here, kind of some of the stuff I just said to you, plus here's what the death counts are right now, here's how they're compiled, here's some evidence of, you know, in some cases there may be some overcounting, but I don't really think that's a severe issue, but it's an issue. But the real issue is that because people are dying from this are generally so old and unwell, it's hard to tell who's dying with this and who's dying from it. And look, by the way, in New York City, there's clear evidence of excess mortality. In other words, some people died who would not have died if we didn't, you know, if COVID didn't exist. But, the question is, does that mean we should shut down society? Does that mean we should, you know, deny children an education, deny college students an education? Those are separate questions. But here's what you need to know. So, okay, here I write this, and it's clear to me, by the way, that I can't write it all in one pamphlet. It's just going to take too long and be too long. So I cut it off with the death count. And I go to Amazon. And by the way, as you said, I'm a published author, and I publish nonfiction also. And I worked at the New York Times for a while, so I have credentials. And I actually published through Amazon before. And I go to Amazon and I put up this pamphlet, or I send it in to their self-publishing platform, which is called Kindle Direct Publishing. And Amazon, as we know, is a private company, but it's a huge company, and it basically controls the book business in the United States. And the next morning, on Thursday, June 4th, I'll never forget this, I get an email from Amazon saying, we're not publishing. It doesn't follow the official narrative around COVID, and so we're not going to publish it. And I thought to myself, this is crazy. Okay, I'm not saying that, 5G causes COVID or AIDS or any, nothing. There's no conspiracy theories in here. And by the way, even if there were conspiracy theories, that should be okay, because you can buy, you can buy bomb-making books on Amazon. You can buy Mein Kampf on Amazon. You can buy, bestiality porn on Amazon. Amazon, sells a lot of stuff. So if you want to write five COVID conspiracy theories, that should be okay too. But that's not what I was doing. Okay. So I then make a stink about this on Twitter. And I got a very lucky break, because I was not sure that Amazon was going to respond. But Elon Musk again got involved, and he tweeted at Jeff Bezos. He said, this is insane. And then he said, Amazon is a monopoly and it needs to be broken up. And 2 hours later, Amazon said to me, oh, we're going to publish your book after all. And, and it turned out the publicity probably did lead to a lot of sales. For a while, the book was the number one selling book in the Amazon Kindle store. It's now sold more than 120,000 copies. So this all basically worked out, but Amazon tried to censor me, and they're still censoring COVID books. I know they are, because people are emailing me about it. So that's what happened with me, but what's happening with the epidemic is more important.
Okay, Alex, hold the thought, because we are a lot more to do, but we're up this is a commercial venture. We don't act like it sometimes.
Sure.
We'll take a break. Alex Berenson will rejoin us in just a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. Alex Berenson continuing to join us. Alex, let me get to the number of things I want to ask you. But first of all, let's talk for just a second about the media. We've got about 3.5 minutes here before we have to break again. Sure. You worked at the New York Times. It's considered the most influential newspaper in this country and maybe the world. Discuss for a moment the media's coverage of this and why.
Sure. So the media's gone crazy about this. There's really no other way to say it. And I think that back in March, that was much more understandable. And again, what was happening in New York City was terrible. It looked terrible, and people were genuinely afraid. And so there was this panic that set in. But in the in the 2.5, now almost 3 months since, as more data has come out, as it's become clear that, that this is something we can manage, and that there may be some difficulties. There may be places where the hospitals, temporarily have problems, but that this is something, this is not going to destroy society. It's not going to destroy our world. And that the deaths are, again, so skewed towards the elderly and people with really severe comorbidities. The media has just kind of refused to accept that. And so they've gone through, last month it was Kawasaki syndrome in children. Children are really basically not affected by this. There's always exceptions, unfortunately. But for the most part, the flu is more dangerous to kids and to young adults than the coronavirus. And the media has refused to accept that. There were those stories about people in their 20s and 30s having strokes. And now that they're actually really for the first time in months is what I would call some unexpected bad news. What's happening in the Sun Belt states, what's happening in Texas, what's happening in Arizona. The media is jumping on that instead of trying to ask there may be a real problem. And we should be cognizant of that. We should be worried about what's happening in Houston and what's happening in some parts of Arizona. But there may also be other things happening that are more subtle in terms of the way we're counting cases right now, who we're testing right now, people staying in the hospital for longer periods of time. There's a lot of subtle stuff that may be going on that good reporters should be looking at and trying to report out, and they're just not doing it.
Alex Berenson with us, and Alex, just I'm trying to understand why, though, because it is now June, and I don't want to be one of those guys who insinuates that the media wants everything to stay locked down, but sometimes it does seem that way, doesn't it?
No, listen, the media hates Donald Trump, okay? Most people in the media hate Donald Trump. I don't think that is even arguable at this point. Okay, and Donald Trump's made a lot of mistakes. I'm a registered political independent. Okay, I have no love for either party, and the way Trump's handled this, there's a lot to criticize about that. But that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that people at the places like the Times and the Washington Post have realized they can beat him over the head with this because it doesn't play to his strengths. You need to be empathetic and you need to sort of be rational, and those are not his strengths. And so they are using this, and if it means panicking the country, it sometimes seems that they don't mind doing that.
Well, I want to I hate to do this, but a couple more questions. We're up against a break. I want to ask you about the return of things we like here, sports and universities. So, Alex Berenson, for another minute or two after we come back, what a day.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.